Chapter 10. Gigi. I've been visiting the mirror in Studio E every night, looking for the edges of the message Bet left me. The girls told me it was her, and probably Liz, and maybe Eleanor, too. It was cleaned off days ago. Everyone else seems to have forgotten the way it looked, but I hear the thread in my head, like my performance music. Each time it repeats, I get more determined to be the best sugar plum fairy, more determined not to give into the ugliness and pettiness of it all. I take the elevator to the first floor. Then I take the stairs to my basement room. It's empty, aside from dust bunnies in the corners and the creaks and clacks of the old radiator and the buzzing of nearly dead light bulbs. But I get lost in the mirror in this room, too. I can't move, can't close my eyes to meditate. Just keep looking at my reflection. Mama always says it's unnatural to spend a lot of time in front of the mirror, that it calls out the worst of us. But for a dancer, the mirror is home. I try to focus and imagine myself filling with light, the way I did in yoga class with Ella back home. I want the beams to erase the message and all my worries about it. Then I lift one of my legs, first to the bar and then toward my ear. I want to become one straight, impossible line, from my left toe on the ground all the way to my right toe in the air, but my body isn't responding as it usually does. There's a little ache in my heart. I can't decide if I'd prefer it to be over Alec or something medical. I'm not sure which is more dangerous. I can help you with that. A male voice cuts through the silence. I pivot with my leg in the air, assuming it's Alec. He's the only one who knows I dance down here. I beam and turn to face him with a look far too eager to be truly innocent. Happy to see you too. It's Henri Dubois, the other new kid, and he's staring me down. He has eyes like the people in Mama's artwork, dark and dreamy and haunted. He runs his hand through his dark, shaggy hair. He's still in his dance belt and tights, and I can't help looking between his legs. Those dance belts make everything look enormous. He catches my gaze and steps back, so I look at the floor. I've got it, I think, I say, and sink even farther into a stretch. He approaches me. We haven't said more than three sentences to each other. The only things I've known about him come from articles I read in dance magazines. He was one of the rising stars at the Paris Opera School. Was, being the operative word. At least according to the gossip. Rumor has it that he was kicked out. Oh, come on, he says. Ballet is a team sport. He walks the rest of the way into the room, dodging broken bar poles. How'd you find me? I say, bringing my leg down on my own. I'm not ready for his hands to be crawling up to support the place where my thigh meets my hip bone. I should be upset he's found my hiding spot. I want only Alec to know about it. I lower myself down to the floor, which seems safer for about 1 second. I was not looking for you. He sits in front of me. His accent is attractive and flowing, and I can't help liking the way his words blend together. For 16 years, I haven't had a single spark of interest in ballet boys, in any boys, really. But suddenly I'm all butterflies and unexpected sweat. I don't feel like myself. My head fills with new thoughts and feelings and ideas. Henri has probably always been cute in class and rehearsals, but I've never really noticed. In the strange, broken light of the notorious basement studio, though, he makes my throat go dry. You hide in here, don't you? He says. When I don't see you in the rec room with everybody else, you're in here? I don't answer. A half smile creeps across his mouth, and I'm not sure what's so funny, but he has the most perfect dimples. I'm tempted to rest my thumbs in them. See how deep they are. Shouldn't you be cooling down from rehearsal? I say, for lack of anything better. Shouldn't you? He spits back, then grins. You ballerinas take things so seriously. He mutters something in French, and I like the way it sounds. And how his mouth curves as he speaks it. Let's stretch, Giselle, He doesn't call me Gigi, but says my name the way it's supposed to be said, all long L's and soft E's. I want to tell him my parents met as 20-something expats in Paris, that they've named me Giselle after the famous ballet.
"We need a little music," he says.
He pulls out his phone and the button clicks echo until tiny chords ping from the device. Suddenly, the Nutcracker pours out. He opens his legs in a V and reaches for me. With strong hands, he pulls my hips toward his and adjusts my leg placement, like a doll's. Not once does he ask, just curls his fingers around my legs and spreads them. Part of me doesn't mind the feel of his touch. Part of me doesn't feel like myself. He touches me like we've been friends for a while, and strangely, I welcome it. He removes his moccasins, and we touch our feet together, letting the soles kiss. The balls of his feet are calloused, and his toe joints are thick and raised. He's got the feet of a dancer. Our legs make a diamond shape until he pulls me forward. I elongate my legs into a straight line. I haven't stretched with a boy like this before. I never join in with the other students when they do it. There were no boys at my California studio, so the girls would stretch each other. Here, there don't seem to be any boundaries. I'm not used to all this touching, but I move even closer, though my mind says no, don't stretch with him like this.
"Don't hyperextend," he warns.
I scoff and show off my flexibility. The space between my thighs inches closer to his dance belt. As he leans forward, I spot a tiny mole beneath his right eye. He's so close he could kiss me if he wanted, and I wouldn't be able to stop him. I've never been kissed before. A few close calls, a brush against my lips, a stage peck, but nothing real, not a kiss with heat. He rolls a white mint in his mouth. The tiny orb oscillates above and below his tongue, a white boat in a red ocean. Sweat dampens my brow and my hands get clammy. He doesn't seem to notice and just interlaces his fingers with mine. My heart jumps a little. I tell it to stop. I should get up and go to the dorms and get ready for bed, but I can't. I feel glued in place.
Comme this way.
We change the stretch. He tugs me forward, lifting me off the floor, and I lie just above him, 2 inches from his chest, a deep tug in my hamstrings, pulling out the soreness caused by new rehearsal jumps. We hold the position and then switch. When he falls forward, I can feel his breath on my stomach. The hair on my body lifts and a faint pulse thrums between my legs like a tiny drum. I snap upright, knocking into him. "I'm all loose," I babble, and close my legs, waiting for the new sensation to disappear. The room feels too quiet. I hear the light buzz. It reverberates under my skin, half pleasant, half terrible. I hear his breathing. I hear the acceleration of my heartbeat. "Control your breathing." He holds me in place, and his eyes study my expression. A chill rushes over me, like there are 1,000 pairs of eyes on my face. Before I can dodge him, Henri leans forward, and his lips brush my cheek and the side of my lips. Too close for comfort. I snap backward. His face falls.
"Giselle, I'm so sorry. I don't know why I did that."
I don't know how to react.
"You just remind me of my ex, Cassie," he says, dropping his head. "You're both just really good. I miss her."
I open my mouth, but nothing comes out again. I tell myself to get up and leave, but my body is heavy and awkward. I don't know how to go without making things weird. We're both the new kids at school. He got here just a few months before me in the summer. We're supposed to have a connection because of that. I fill the silence.
"So, France. I've been there. Well, Paris and Toulouse. And
I stumble over the pronunciation.
Boulogne.
His voice is so low and husky compared to mine that I blush. He presses his thumbs into my leg muscles.
"When you speak French, Let your lips go soft and move your mouth slower.
I nod. He makes me say the city name again, but I fumble with the long French syllables.
So, you've been many places in my country, he says.
I nod again. My parents have an apartment in the 19th arrondissement near Sacré-Cœur, and we go most summers so Mama can paint, but I don't say any of that.
I was born in Cheriton-le-Pont, just outside of Paris. My maman and I moved into the city when I was 8.
Is that when you started dancing?
I ask.
Oui,
Henri says.
I think I was almost 10.
10? I say with a shock that embarrasses me. Most dancers start when they're 5, or even younger.
I am a quick study. Ballet became my obsession. I have many, he says. Are you from New York?
Me? Oh, no, I say. California.
I've never been. Just seen on American TV. Beaches, sunshine, surfing, little dogs in big purses, car chases, he teases, all smiles.
I slap his leg playfully. There's much more than that. He rubs my hand and I pull it back. I quickly ask another question. Do you miss home? Do you like it here?
Do you?
He asks. Yeah, I guess. It's growing on me.
You should be careful, he says.
Guess he wasn't. He touches my arm. My stomach flutters, and I wonder if I'll ever get used to all these boys around me, Alec, and now Henri. What happened to her? He grimaces, and though I want to know, I don't press any further. I know the discomfort of talking about something you don't want to.
Just watch out, he says, especially after that mirror thing.
He shakes his head and mutters a word in French that feels like a curse. The girls told me it was bet, most likely, I say, not quite sure I should accuse her to other people.
Be careful with that one, he says,
fingers grazing my cheek, almost as if he doesn't realize he's doing it. I try not to flinch.
I don't want you getting hurt.
The overhead bulbs dim, threatening to go out. The shifts in light make a mess of his face. In the new shadows, he's a different person. Heavier brow, hidden eyes, frowning mouth. I feel like we shouldn't be in here alone in the dark anymore. The last few notes of the Nutcracker ping out of his phone, and then it's just me and Henri and the silence. He reaches for me again as the lights stamp out, and he kisses my cheek.
Chapter 11. Bet. It's late, almost 9 p.m. curfew, but I head to the first floor studios. I take the most public route I can think of, making sure to pass by a few open dorm rooms, and even take the elevator to the basement past the student lounge. I want them all to see me exactly as I am, hardworking and dedicated, and not willing to be thrown off course by something ridiculous, like Gigi Stewart, who probably got the Sugar Plum Fairy part by letting Mr. K touch her for a few beats longer than was actually necessary. Maybe she let her lips graze his neck. Or worse, it wouldn't be the first time girls had thrown themselves at Mr. K for a role. And it wouldn't be the first time he gave into it either. Just a little something I learned from in-depth conversations with Adele. She slipped up and told me about those too close moments brought on by hard work and late-night rehearsals. How working so intensely on something brings out feelings. How things might cross the line. And about how girls can get caught up in it all. But Mr. K's never tried anything with me. I know the history of this place backward and forward. And when an unknown, awkward nobody gets cast in an important role, there's usually a good reason for it. My assessment makes me feel better. I walk by the rest of the dancers with pride and a new leotard. Even during class, I am the perfect ballerina. Even in a room by myself with all the doors locked, just me and the mirrors and the music, I am everything Mr. K and my mother and Adele and the school have ever asked me to be. I am perfect. I go back upstairs to the main floor, through the lobby, which is now being wiped clean of an earlier reception for the petite rat's parents. I take another long route, fluttering past Mr. K's dark office and the cast list. I peek into each studio, just so I know who's dancing and who's slacking off or prioritizing an English paper or a new boyfriend. Eleanor is in one of them, but she's just doing bar work and checking herself out in the mirror. We used to always rehearse side by side, pushing each other to do better and complimenting each other's footwork. Somewhere along the way, though, she said I was too intense during practice, and it wasn't fun anymore. I guess she's not wrong. And she does look happy now, inching away from the mirror, mesmerized by her own body. I would never want to take that away from anyone, especially not her. I run into Liz. She's drenched and clearly has been in the basement weight room. Not that she needs it. Her eyes are all hollowed out lately, and her arms and legs so thin and wiry that I worry about her strength. But we don't call each other out on things like that. Pilates? I say to her. Elliptical. She breathes out, panting, wiping sweat from her face. It's very unbecoming. I burned 600 calories. I frown at her. She doesn't need all the extra workouts. In the past year, she shrunk down from a respectable size 2 to an, I don't know what, negative 2, if there's such a size. How does she even find anything to fit her anymore? God, Bet, stare much? She says as she pats the last few drops of wetness away, smoothing down her hair. Hey, so I've been meaning to ask, what's it like practicing with Henri? There's a wink in her voice, but I don't like the implication. Alec and I have had our ups and downs, but at the moment, we're very much on again. Yeah, he's hot, I say, already heading in the other direction, my tone colder than it should be. But you know I have a boyfriend. Uh-huh, Liz says, pulling her long dark hair into a high ponytail, and I can't help but stare at her two lean legs, not sure whether I should worry about her or be jealous, as she peers into the other studio, where a few of the boys practice jumps. She's looking for Henri, no doubt. Things between Liz and me have been good lately, but there was a time when we competed for everything, including Alec. But he made his choice pretty early on, and after a few petty incidents, Liz realized there was no changing that. It was just making her look desperate. Plus, we finally figured, we're more powerful together than working against each other. It just makes sense. She heads up to shower, and I'm about to enter Studio C when I remember a little something Eleanor mentioned earlier, that Gigi practices in the old basement studio. I'd stored the information, and now I want to test it out. I want her to know she can't do anything in this school without me knowing about it. I don't miss much around here. She'll learn. I pass the nutritionist's office. I pause at the top of the staircase. I remember being little and sneaking to the edge of these steps with Eleanor and Alec and Will. We'd dare each other to go stand in front of the locked door. Whoever did it the longest always got candy from a secret stash and, most important, glory. Voices drift up to me. I can see the door is open a hair, and I'm nothing if not graceful. So I tiptoe down, dip under the window, and peek in through the slightly open door without being heard or sensed. There she is, Gigi, the sugar plum fairy. Except she's not dancing. She's on her back, legs splayed, Henri pressing on her thigh as he stretches her out in semi-darkness. I don't know why, but I shiver as I watch, almost like I'm outside in the crisp fall air. I remember that Cassie used to come here too. The insomniac girl who got in trouble for dancing all night. The girl with the perfect 180-degree grand jeté. The only level 6 girl to land a major soloist role last year, even above me. I don't like thinking about her. I want to forget that I even knew her and how good she was, and especially that she's Alec's cousin. Henri lets his hair drop around his face and says things I can't hear. I don't like the way he touches Gigi and makes her laugh. I don't like how his fingers graze a loose curl near her neck. Her voice is light and delicate. It's too pretty. Henri is eating it up. And if Henri's eating it up, I worry that Alec will fall for it too when they start rehearsing. My stomach twists. I can't remember a time when Alec and I weren't together. My first memories have him in them, from family dinners when my dad was still around, to dance classes and kissing him in the school's dark corners. It was always just us. I take out my cell phone and zoom in on Gigi and Henri with the camera. I click the picture button. The flash is too bright, so I duck and slink away quickly, quietly. I don't get caught when I do things like this, and I don't need that to change. I run back to the upstairs to Studio C and throw myself into the Snow Queen variation. I do 5, 10, 20 pirouettes, but the image of Gigi and Henri races through my head alongside my music. I drop down off point and pace the room. I scream at my reflection and hope no one hears me, or sees me breaking down in this glass box of a space. I cover my ears and let my head bob on my shoulders, falling into a deep stretch. I try to revel in the pink message and its cryptic cleverness, the powerful way it made me feel writing it and waiting for someone to discover it. How Gigi's face had fallen, how lucky I was that everyone saw it at the same time. I was probably the only one who spotted the tears in her eyes. I hope she's cried every night since. That's not quite true. I hope she goes back to California. She'll be happier there anyway, so it's not even that terrible that I want her to leave. It would be better for everyone. The girl is too fragile and sweet and mellow to succeed here. In some ways, I'm just looking out for her. She'll realize it soon enough, that ballet is too much for her. That it makes you do things, makes you do whatever is necessary. I remember Adele's advice before my first casting audition. She yanked me out of the pack of petit ras. "You don't get many shots, Peach." Her hands were in my hair, redoing my bun the proper way with a hairnet. "So, when the opportunity comes," she leaned into my ear, "you've got to claw your way to the top." My body relaxes at the memory. Adele would approve. Maybe not of these methods, but of my motivation for sure. I grab my warm-ups and head upstairs to my room. When I open the door, Eleanor jumps from the futon and turns off the TV. I see those old videos of Adele out on the floor. "Again?" I say. "She has perfect feet, Bet," Eleanor says. "Arched like bananas." I can't even fight the compliment she gives my sister. "Can I use your printer?" I ask, wishing I didn't have to, but I've been avoiding my mother, so I couldn't possibly ask her to send me new ink. I don't have time to go get more. "What for?" she asks, clicking the TV back on. "Just a little surprise for Gigi." My voice lifts an octave with excitement. "Got pics of her and Henri in some compromising positions." Eleanor frowns. "We're not doing that again, are we?" Her words bite, and I almost drop my phone. "We are," I snap, waiting for her to look away from me and apologize for her weakness, to join in on the little fun I have planned, like she's done 1,000 other times before. "Uh-huh, sounds great," she says, easing slowly back into watching my sister perform a perfect rendition of Keatrice's solo from Dong Q. "Let me know how it goes." I don't let her hesitation stop me. I plug my phone into Eleanor's computer and wait for the picture to load. I try to block the screen so she can't see, but she doesn't even look up. Eleanor can turn into sort of a saint at times, but I know how to get her to do things. I print the picture, delete it from Eleanor's downloads folder, and slip out the door while Eleanor's still in a Dell trance. The 11th floor hall is empty. Everyone's mostly in their rooms listening to music, in the upstairs student lounges watching TV, on other floors, or sewing shoes and stretching. I go to the light and tap 3 times on the door. No one is in there. I lock the door behind me. I exhale, surrounded by pictures of primas and beautiful thin bodies and perfect feet. The day after I turned 12, my mother shipped me off across Central Park to the school dorms, finally old enough to live on my own here. Back then, I used to visit this closet every night. I used to fall asleep on the floor sometimes, and the RAs would have to wake me to go back to my room. I run my fingers over the collaged walls and find a spot for the picture in my hands. Before I tack it up, I see a message that makes me smile. Gigi should watch her back. I rub my finger over it. Someone else hates her as much as I do. I'm not alone. I grab one of the glue sticks that sit on top of the TV. I wipe it all over the back of the picture. I slam the page on the wall and smack it hard, like I'm hitting Gigi's face 1,000 times. I step back to admire the picture among the others. At first glance, you can't tell it's one unlike the others. I wish I could see the look on people's faces when they spot it, and the look on Gigi's face especially.
Chapter 12. June. I'm lucky my weigh-in time is at 5:10 p.m. after academic classes. Gigi is off somewhere by herself, probably smelling the flowers she keeps plucking from God knows where, and I have the room to myself. She's been at it for the past few days, claiming that her mama says a flower scent helps boost happy brain chemicals. I don't care about being happy, only about being the best. I think through what I've eaten today. 3 cups of clear tea, 1/2 grapefruit sprinkled with a pinch of sugar, 1 rice cake, 1/2 pint of soup, a mixed green salad, no dressing, and 1/2 scoop of tuna. Although I must admit, I didn't touch the tuna. But I count it because it was on the salad. If there were any day I could eat, it would be today. Weigh-in Wednesday is on every calendar in these halls. For some of the girls, like Bet, it isn't ever a problem. They're carrying a few extra pounds here and there, just what they need to keep Nurse Connie's confidence. But I need more. Nurse Connie has rules. For my height, I should be 110 pounds, a hippo in tights. Instead, I make sure I'm a model of grace, with perfect posture, a lithe, lean frame, a prize winner all around. I do what I have to do. It's all a concerted effort, because I take my work and myself seriously, unlike some of the other girls. When I weighed myself this morning, the scale read 99 pounds, a number that the other girls would kill for, a number that means I'm light and liftable. But here, anything less than 100 pounds at my age and height gets you sent packing. And I can't let that happen. I won't let that happen. I pour myself a tall glass of water from my electric teapot. It's my 4th in 1/2 hour. Today, I need the water weight, as slight as it is. But it won't be enough. So I sit at my desk and pull a needle and some thread out of my dance bag. From the desk drawer, I take 4 pieces of the Korean won my grandmother gave me the one time I met her. They are ideal, heavier than American coins. I pick up my clean Wednesday leotard from its labeled bureau drawer and flip it inside out. We're required to wear them for weigh-in. A little mesh pocket lifts from the crotch area. The perfect don't-go-there space. I set 4 won on my digital food scale. The numbers blink. 612 grams, 1.34 pounds. Just right. The won fit perfectly in the leotard's little pocket, and I sew the tissue paper wrapped coins into the flap. Unnoticeable to anyone but me. I pull the leotard on over my pink tights and smooth out the edges so nothing protrudes. The coin-filled pouch pushes between my legs like the maxi pads I don't have to wear anymore, since I stopped getting my period. I pull on a chiffon dance skirt over my ensemble. No one will ever know. I step on my floor scale. The numbers calibrate and settle on 101 pounds. A warm flush rushes through me. Just to be sure, I drink 2 more glasses of water. I take the elevator to the basement before going to the nutritionist's office on the first floor. I stop in the computer lab, printing out a hastily written English paper, since I have some time to kill and can't stand the nerves when I'm just standing around waiting for my appointment. The computer lab has been officially taken over by the Korean contingency. They do everything in a big group. Eat, watch Korean soap operas on their laptops, and spend weekends at Sejin's aunt's brownstone on the Upper East Side. Right now, they are all video chatting with faraway relatives, and it's an assault of fast-paced Korean, so speedy I can't even make out the occasional noun. I fight the pinch in my stomach, burying the nagging desire to be part of their group. I've seen exactly how cruel they can be, so why do I still want that? Sejin sees me, and as usual, throws out some insults in Korean, commanding the whole room to laugh. I'm sure she's calling me a banana or whatever the Korean word is for a halfy. I recognize Sejin's mother on her computer screen, and a part of me wants to wave hello. Just so Sejin is forced to talk about me and make up some lie about why we aren't friends anymore. Just to make her feel that pinch of discomfort in catering to Korean social graces. Sejin's mother used to visit the conservatory when we were smaller. And she always reminded me of my own mom. When we lived together, Sejin and I would compare notes on them, complaining about their constant stress and their ugly haircuts and disdain for American music and food. I taught Sejin how to say curse words in English, and we'd whisper them under our breath when our moms made us angry. She delighted in the sounds and taught me a few key phrases in Korean that I once let fly at my mom during a particularly heated argument. It was worth facing my mom's wrath when I got to tell Sejin about my triumph. That feels like a long, long time ago. I don't even remember myself in that friendship, and I definitely don't remember her. She takes off the headphones and microphone.
When my mother saw you walk in, she asked who the ugly new American girl was, Sejin says, just as I'm about to exit with my English paper in hand. Her accent emphasizes the harshness of her words. I told her it was Ijeon Kim, and she said she couldn't believe it. She said whoever your father is, he must be one ugly American pig.
She emphasizes the insult, pig. Like it's a current thing normal American teens use. I want to laugh at her. I want to push her out of the way and explain to her mom how our friendship changed.
Oh, right. You don't have any idea who he is. Yes, must have been a pig to make you.
I try to stop my body and face from reacting, but the parts don't listen. I inhale sharply, stumble over one of my own feet, and wish away the sweat gathering behind my ears. I try to remember my plan to hurt her.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Sejin says, watching my face.
Maybe I translated wrong?
She smiles, but even then her perfect creamy skin doesn't crack. Not a single dimple or smile line or flaw. She hasn't translated wrong, of course. Her English is perfect, but she always blames her cruelty on the language barrier anyway. And I can't even defend my mystery dad. I have no idea who he is, only that he's white and practically a ghost. The other girls pause their own individual conversations to watch Seijin and me. Most of them came from Seoul when they were six, right when I enrolled. At first we were all friends. They stayed with nearby Korean relatives and my mom would invite them to do things in the city with us. We'd have dinners and sleepovers. But after Seijin spread the rumor, they all took her side. That's when they stopped speaking in English around me, or coming to my room at night to talk about the stupid American girls. I went from being part of their group, part of something that felt so comfortable, to being a total outsider. Now Seijin likes the others to believe that I don't fit because I'm half white, because I can't speak much Korean, because I'll try to make out with them all. It's enough to offend their prudish ways and keep me away, for sure. But really, Seijin is scared of the secret only I know about. How would they treat her? What would Jaehee think? She'd be the one all alone, left out.
My mother said your mother slept with a lot of people to get ahead, Seijin says. She said your father was probably one of the teachers or someone with a bunch of money.
She cocks her head. Unable to defend my mom, for all I know, it's true. I walk out without another word. But I know her mom said none of these things. Those were my theories I used to go through with her when I was upset with my mom for not telling me about my dad. Seijin's mom is always nice to me when she sees me. Always pats my head and tells me how pretty I am. Heat crawls up my neck, and I try my hardest not to look back, even though I can feel Seijin's heavy gaze on me. Her mean words still ringing in my head, taunting me. I walk slow and straight and composed, as if she's not affecting me at all. After my run-in with Seijin and her followers, the nutritionist's office is almost a sterile metallic relief. Almost. At least I can sit on the cool metal table and savor the quiet until Nurse Connie shows up to ruin everything. The white tissue paper crinkles under my butt as I fidget with anxiety. Her office is sandwiched between the studios on the first floor. A constant reminder that she's in here lurking and ready to make sure we're all following the rules about our weight. The tools of Nurse Connie's trade are on display in the office. Two gleaming, mean-spirited scales, one digital and one traditional. And there, on the wall, are tape measures, strung like snakes that nip at your wrists, your waist, your thighs, threatening to expose your darkest secrets. When these come down, you know you've gone too far, that home beckons, that your skin and bones aren't enough to sustain you any longer. I've only had to face the snakes once, in eighth grade, when I hit 96 pounds, and the school called my mom, who nearly hauled me home. I ate and ate and ate that weekend, gorging myself like a fat pink pig, until I hit 100, and they let me come back to school. I feel the weight of the coins, comforting, and that's what I think about when Nurse Connie breezes in, not saying a word before taking my blood pressure. It's low again, and checking my heart rate. "Remove your dance skirt, please," she says. "I didn't mean to," I stutter. She waves her hand in the air. Today, she doesn't want to hear it. "When was your last menstrual cycle?" she says. "2 weeks ago." The lie comes out effortlessly, because I track when my period would come if I still had it, just to be prepared. "Are you sexually active?" "No," I say, and wonder if one day that answer will change. She gives me safe sex reminders. I remember last year how crazy sex rumors went around about Cassie cheating on her Paris Opera school star boyfriend Henri, futile attempts to break them up and pollute their budding fame as ballet's new it couple. But I wonder if they were having sex, if that helped them dance so passionately together, if Nurse Connie had to give her more than just gentle reminders. "Stand," Nurse Connie says, and I do, stepping onto the wobbly pad of the traditional scale, old school, and as mean as any of our teachers. meaner, maybe. I close my eyes and hold my breath, wondering if the air might make me heavier. She shifts the weights from one end to the other and back, dark and calculating, determining my fate, as she does every week.
"Hmm,"
she says. The concerned tone seeps into my pores. A cold sweat drips quietly down my back and dots my hairline, taking my makeup with it. And that's when she says it.
"About 101. Not good. Get on the other one."
I do as she instructs, stepping automatically on the digital scale, as I've done once a week for a decade now. I clasp my hands together in almost prayer formation. I gather my breath again. Liquid churns in my stomach. She doesn't look happy. She holds a chart that records my height and weight and soul, deciding whether or not I deserve a place in these halls.
101,
she repeats, and I exhale with relief, though it is peppered with fear and doubt and, yes, satisfaction.
"Not good at all, Ijeon."
"I know." I can't tell her that I just needed to get above 100. That was my goal. I step down, like a good girl, and take a seat, praying, praying, praying that those snakes don't slither my way today. They'll give me away for sure. She touches my leg muscles. I wince and imagine she's about to say my legs are too skinny, my arms too frail to support the ballet movements, that at some point I'll collapse, unable to support my own weight. And I can't have that now. Not when I'm so close. Not when I can nearly taste it. Not when my mother is threatening to pull me out of the conservatory.
"I know I don't have to remind you of this," she says with a patronizing tone. "But you need to eat more. Tell me, what did you have for breakfast and lunch?"
I don't tell her the real items. Instead, I repeat my memorized lines.
"Half a grapefruit, a cup of non-fat yogurt with fresh cherries, two bananas, a salad with tuna, coffee and cream."
As I give her that embellished list, I can almost feel the bite of the imaginary caffeine and calories swooshing in my stomach. She looks intently at the chart, seeing right through my lies.
"You weren't in the cafeteria last night. I don't have your signature on the list."
Her evil sign-in sheets stare up at me, her prison-inspired way of making sure we are present for all meals.
"What did you eat for dinner?"
"My mother brought me some pechuguk." I smile sweetly, knowing that the foreign words will fluster her.
"Because I've been working so hard, you know, as understudy for the Sugar Plum Fairy."
She smiles back, but I know she doesn't quite buy it. She needs to focus on girls like Liz. She's the one who's severely underweight. I kind of want to say that, but I know it'll only make me look guilty. She rests her hands on the tape measures. I hear my heartbeat echo in my ears. They're coming down.
"Well," she says, "I'd like to see you back up to 104 in 2 weeks, with a goal to get as close to 110 as possible, and I want to see you at the cafeteria each evening. I will look for you myself, and the resident advisors will be informed too, and make sure you're eating a proper balanced meal."
Suddenly, her voice is ice.
"Because, Ijeon, you know this is very serious. You're 16 now, and you know the rules. From now on, it's one strike, and you're out. There are no more second chances."
I do my best to maintain that sweet smile, but I can feel it slipping. My heart threatens to leap from my chest. She's not on my side, not any of ours. She'll report us and start the paperwork to send us home. She'll get the guidance counselor involved and then Mr. K. She doesn't care what it means to be a dancer, what sacrifices it takes. And she knows that Mr. K will easily let me go. That I'm nothing. I can be replaced. Girls are a dime a dozen in ballet. Not like the boys who are treated like princes. Another girl will be plucked from some audition somewhere.
Sure. I move to grab my bag. I know. 103. Next week. 104, she reminds me sternly. And if you can't, we'll have to just schedule a bone density scan. I don't need one of those, I say. The smile disappearing from my face. It'll tell us exactly what you need, actually, and find all the things my scales miss. I chew the inside of my mouth and don't know what to do. Say something else. Turn around and walk out. Lunge at her. Cry. Last year, one of the level 6 girls got a bone scan, and it showed all her little secrets. How little food she ate, how she didn't get her period anymore, how many stress fractures she'd danced through just to keep her rolls. They sent her back home after that, to Texas. I'll ask my mother if I need one, I managed to get out. No need. I have her medical waiver. That's enough for us to order one if we need to. I am here to take care of all the dancers to do what's best for them so they can be strong and healthy on stage. I try not to breathe too hard. I want to call her a liar. Oh, and Gigi's your roommate, right? She asks, like she hasn't just said something that could potentially ruin my entire life. Yes, I say, a little harsher than I meant to. I don't want to be Gigi's roommate. I was here before her. She should be June's roommate. June, the girl who's been at the school for 10 years. You headed up to your room now? She says. Yes, I say, cautious, unsure of what she wants. Tell Gigi to come down and see me, please, if she's up there. I have something for her. She taps the top of a messy pile of sealed envelopes. One has Gigi's name printed on it. Okay, I say. She goes into the interior office without saying goodbye. I know she's done with me. I pluck the envelope from the stack. There are so many envelopes here. She won't miss this one. She'll think she's misplaced it, and print out another copy of whatever it is. I thumb it between my fingers, wondering what's inside. Even if it's nothing, it's still good to know everything. Or maybe it's something that'll keep her from dancing. After all, injuries are the reasons for understudies. I rearrange the rest of the envelopes and slip out the door, my prize in hand. I leave the office, hiding a smile, excited to return to my room for some light reading. I'll just take a peek. No one will ever know.
Chapter 13. Gigi. We need to practice our grandpa, Alex says after a rehearsal is officially over tonight. I need to get our lifts just right. He takes my hand and leads me out of the rehearsal space to Studio F across the hall. I feel Beth's gaze on my back, but ignore it. I'm not doing anything wrong. We do have to practice. He closes the door behind us, not that it could hide us in here behind all this glass. Right away, he goes to the bar and takes hold of it. I stand behind him, admiring the muscles in his legs and how broad his shoulders are. I've never wondered about what a boy might look like undressed. I've never considered what little details I might be missing, given all I already see of their bodies. Let's warm up again, he says. Then practice the lift. You up for it? I nod and drop my bag against the wall, ignoring the mess that spills out of it. I don't bother putting on pointe shoes. Instead, just slide off the squishy muckluck slippers Mama sent me from her trip to New Mexico and walk barefoot to him. We stretch our legs onto the bar. My limbs feel twitchy being so close to him. When my parents and aunt moved me into the dorms, Alec was the first one to introduce himself, marched right up with a smile, and welcomed me to the conservatory. And every day after that, he'd check on me, ask me how my day was and how I was adjusting, always ready to give me little tips here and there. He's the one who told me that June's frowning isn't about her not liking me. That's just the way her face is. I chuckle at the memory. Alec gives me a what's so funny look. Nothing, I say, pushing deeper into the stretch. Did you always dance? He asks. Yeah, pretty much, I say, leaning to the right, feeling the stretch up my side. You? He follows my pattern. My whole life. My dad danced here.
The great Dom Lucas. He mimics Mr. K's thick Russian accent.
Oh, right, I say, feeling a little stupid for not remembering that. I always forget Mr. Lucas is your dad. That must be amazing. My sister and I like to forget, he says with a sad smile. He doesn't act like much of a dad. I don't know what to say, so I just let my hand find his back and stroke the spine in a few long, careful brushes. I'm sorry, I say at last. I didn't know. He smiles back at me and then guides my body to switch sides with his. I gaze around the room. We're alone, but it makes me feel strange. Seasick. I try to snap out of it. This is what I wanted, right? And I'm getting it. Can you help me stretch my leg? I ask, not really needing him to, but wanting him to touch me. Yeah. He moves closer. I place my leg on the bar, then he lifts it gently off until it's above my head. I look up at my foot. My hip loosens and I feel a satisfying pull. That feel okay? He asks. I nod, feeling each of his words land on my cheek. I want him to kiss me. I shouldn't have a crush on him. Even saying the word in my head makes me blush. He's with Bet. We're only dancing together. We'll be all over after the Nutcracker performance. He lowers my leg, then I lift the other one for him, and he repeats the movement, pushing into me, his chest against my leg. He taps a bead along my thigh, and I try not to laugh. Hey, I say with a big smile. He flashes his signature grin at me and puts my leg down. Here, let me try a few of those lifts. Do you mind? I'm struggling with them. I almost ask him if I'm too heavy, but I bite my tongue. He's used to dancing with Bet, who is smaller, wispier than me. I shake off the thought. I shouldn't worry about something so foolish when my body is so strong and reliable. I need to focus on getting these lifts right, finding the right partner rhythm with him. The Nutcracker's grand pas de deux is one of the most intricate and difficult partnering variations. The audience anticipates the dance between the Sugar Plum Fairy and her prince the entire ballet. I won't let it be a disappointment. We don't do the lifts in the staged, practiced way we're supposed to. We don't mark our movements the way our teacher showed us, then slowly slide into the dangerous positions. Instead, Alec just grabs me by the waist, presses his thumbs into my back, and raises me sloppily into the air for a shoulder lift. It isn't a sanctioned ballet move. It isn't part of our choreography or anything we would ever rehearse in the pressure cooker of the ballet class. But I soar, and he is strong beneath me. I throw my head back and let myself get lost in the cracks of the ceiling. My arms stretch behind me, my heart thumps, and Alec's arm muscles twitch below me. The way down is slippery and hot. He lowers me so that my body meets his, our torsos kissing. I am all tingles in my spine, my stomach, my heart. The beat pulses all over me, and I'm embarrassed. If he touches my skin, he'd feel it and know how excited he makes me. We do the lift a few more times until his thumbprints are permanently indented in my back and little raw blisters have started to form. I don't let him see the pain as he slides me down for the last time. I stand below him, my head still back so that I am lost in his eyes. And while I'm distracted by the way blue meets green meets black at the very edge of his pupils, he surprises me by touching my face, letting his fingers linger along my cheek and down my neck, like he's drawing shapes on my skin, leaving a burning trail behind. I want him to kiss me. I want to know what his mouth tastes like. I want to know how his tongue would feel. I inch back because standing there, framed by the glass panels, peering in, breath fogging the glass, is Eleanor. I pull away from him. What's wrong? He says. Eleanor disappears down the hall. I don't say anything about her. What about Bet? He scratches his head and shrugs. I chew my bottom lip and have to stop myself before I split the skin there again. Aren't you together? We were always on and off, hot and cold, like in a cycle, sort of. One that's off. But now, he touches my cheek again. I want something different, like you. I hold his gaze as excitement flushes through me. I feel the cheek he's touching grow warm, and I hope his use of the word different isn't related to the color of my skin, and just that Ben and I have opposite personalities. He cups the back of my neck and wraps a loose curl around his finger. I try not to flinch and fight the urge to not want him to touch my hair. What if it's all sticky from the product I put in it? What if the curls feel rough to the touch and not smooth and silky like Bette's perfectly straight blonde hair? I'm going to talk to her. Tell her it's over. It kind of has been these past few weeks. I fight away a smile. How are we different, besides the obvious? I rub a finger over my forearm to highlight the color. When I saw you helping one of the little girls with her first pair of point shoes, I knew, he says. I watched you outside of Studio A. Oh, Celine, I say, remembering catching the little one, struggling to break in her first pair of point shoes. You were late for class and didn't care. His comment causes my cheeks to redden again. Let me show you something. He pulls me forward and out of the studio. We climb all 10 flights up to the 11th floor, and he won't tell me why we were taking the stairs instead of the elevator. I work hard to keep my breathing calm and even. I'm nervous about him being so close to my room, or worse, Bette's. We duck through the hallway exit door. There isn't an RA doing hall rounds yet. We slip past slightly open doors and the bathroom. He tugs me forward. I try not to laugh. I try not to get us caught. I hear only a few girls. Mostly everyone is getting a post-rehearsal snack in the cafe. We go to the very end of the hall. Have you been to the light yet? He asks. The what? I say. You haven't then. We step into a dark closet at the tail end of the hallway. I always thought it was just a storage room. He pretends to fumble for the light switch and rubs his hands along my neck and over my bun. Alec, I say, not really wanting him to stop. He clicks on the light. The small space is collaged with pictures. Anna Pavlova, Mikhail Baryshnikov, Margot Fonteyn, Rudolf Nureyev, and others. Quotes about ballet, quotes about dance. Perfect bodies, perfect feet, perfect costumes. Conservatory graduates, company members. Dancewear ads featuring up-and-coming primas. All white faces. Startling as first snow. I try to suppress a sudden pang of homesickness, of wanting to belong somewhere. What is this? I say. June didn't tell you about this? It's been here as long as the school's been open. No one knows who started it. Of course she didn't. She hasn't been talking to me much all lately. No matter how much I've been trying to connect with her. He tells me more. As I run my fingers over the walls, trying to soak up each quote, studying each image. I see my name and lift up on my tiptoes, but can't reach. Alec, I say. He comes up behind me. I feel his hips press against mine and it flushes me with warmth. There's barely an inch between us. I can feel the warmth of his body through my leotard. He reaches over me, takes down the note, and scans it before crumpling it up. He's about to toss it on the floor, but I take it. I shouldn't have brought you in here, he says. I should have known they'd be at it again. I scramble to read it. It says, Gigi should watch her back. I trace my fingers over the words. Suddenly I'm angry. See anything else? He points to a picture to the left. It's of me and Henri stretching that night in the basement studio. I rip it off. I can't believe it, is all I can say. We were just stretching. He kind of crashed my alone time. I'm fuming and trying to keep it from showing on my face. Do you like him? He says. Who? Henri? Yeah. No, I say, wanting to add that I like him. But I don't. Alec doesn't say anything, but I can see a small smile in the corner of his mouth. He takes the picture down, crushing it in his hand. I'm sorry I brought you here. All that stuff has ruined it. No, I'm glad you did, I say. I should know what I'm in for, right? The enemy, you know, and all that. They did the same stupid stuff to Cassie, he says, finally. He started just like this. Notes left in her room or bag, even stuffed in her shoes. Who's they? What exactly happened to her? I ask, while still combing over the walls for anything else, my stomach churning with anxiety. His warning echoes Henri's. It's hard to be on top here. It's even harder to be great and still have friends, especially for the girls. The boys like the competition. We thrive on it. Make us work harder. The girls make it dark, full of drama. The competition brings it out. They let it get to them and act crazy. He tucks one of my curls behind my ear, and I try not to cringe, hating that he touched my hair when it's all sweaty and has a ton of product in it. Cassie had to take a rest. Well, she's still resting. A rest? I say. Yes. While she was here, she got hurt, and it affected her badly. So my aunt put her in an institution. My dad calls it a rehab center, he whispers. Please don't tell anyone that. No one at all. Of course not. What did they do to her? I ask, the words careful and soft. All sorts of pranks, he says without elaborating. Then it all got to be too much. Who did it? I ask, unsure if I should bring up the fact that Bette left that message on the mirror. I don't really know. A lot of different people, making it hard for teachers and Mr. K to figure it out. Bette and her were close, and even she couldn't find out. I try my best not to frown, or think that Bette must have had something to do with it. She seems like she's at the heart of everything in this school. He tells me about how they all used to hang out. I nod and turn away from him. A white page sticks out on the wall of colorful cutouts, folded over, inviting. I missed it before. Curiosity pushes me to look at the page while Alec looks at the opposite wall and talks about growing up with Cassie. I gulp. It's my medical report from late September. My latest EKG. The line spikes and dips go up and down like a kindergartner's artwork, exposing my weird heartbeats. I rip it down and crumple it into an angry ball. What's wrong? Alec says, making his way to me. Just shocked about what happened to Cassie. I feel horrible for lying, but he can't know. No one can know. How did this get in here? Who would be able to find something like this? I tell myself to calm down, to breathe easy. I can't get my heart to slow down, though. The stress. Or maybe it's Alec. His arm brushes mine. I let my hand slide into his. He leans forward, and I know we shouldn't be in here. We shouldn't be standing this close to each other. I shouldn't like him. He surprises me with a kiss. A real one. Warm and wetter than I had expected. And so deep, I'm scared he will find out all my body's terrible secrets just from the exploration of our mouths. We kiss for so long, my lips go numb. So long, I forget to wonder whether he is Bette's or mine or just his own person. So long I forget to protect myself, forget to control my breathing, forget to be afraid of anything at all. So long I don't care about what things were put up on the walls around me. And just when all the fear has drained from my body through the opening and closing and exploring of our mouths, it floods me again. I push him away a little. My heart is thumping hard, and I can't catch my breath. This is wrong. I want him so much, but he is not mine. Not yet. Bette, I whisper as light as I can, not wanting the weight of her name to fill up the small room. He tells me that they're done. He tells me that he'll tell her. He tells me how much he wants me. I press myself against him, kiss him first this time.
letting the feeling of his lips and the taste of his mouth erase all the secrets and lies that are swirling around me.